Call the meeting to order, please.
You stood. We're standing.
Need a roll call here.
A standing roll call, right?
We'll go ahead and have the Pledge of Allegiance before the roll call.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. I know that some of you may have the most unique ringtone in the world, but save it for outside later. Please deaden or put your cell phones at stun, whatever. And if you wish to speak on any issue, we need you to fill out a request for public comment. And roll call, please.
Commissioner Gilliland, Councilmember Handy Peters.
Present.
Vice Mayor Matusik, Vice Mayor Nabik.
Pleased to be here.
Councilman Conroy.
Here.
Commissioner Curry.
Here.
Commissioner McGurk.
Here.
Councilmember Saylor.
Here.
Commissioner Stowers.
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo is excused. Councilmember Ford. Councilwoman Long.
Here.
Commissioner Revels.
Here.
Councilmember Patterson.
Here.
Councilmember Denny's.
Here.
Councilmember Cusack. County Chair Davis.
Here.
Councilmember Wagner. Mayor Emmett.
Here.
Vice Mayor Rogers. Councilmember Wheeler.
Here.
Commissioner Shoup.
Here.
Vice Mayor Burton. Mayor Gibson.
Here.
Mayor Sal.
Here.
Councilmember Perrone.
Here.
Linda Costello. Heather Blank.
Here.
Judy Craig. Dustin Savage is excused, and we have a quorum, and the voting member of the Small City Alliance is Commissioner Shoup for Flagler Beach.
Oh, you get to say something today.
No.
Oh, okay. We do have a request for a public comment. Big, you are recognized.
Big John, the big house on the hill. So I thought I'd take dibs on a thought today so Patterson don't steal it when he hears about it later. I know that Robbie up there and Miriam and everybody's working feverishly on East ISB. Matter of fact, Miriam was able to get her 27th contract for ISB from FDOT, and it's coming out next month, to analyze East ISB. So they're going to have circles, or they're going to have ovals, or they're going to have something, maybe. So I just want to put in the dibs right now on the name Tri-ovals in honor of Big Bill for the traffic calming device on East ISB. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Is there any items on the consent agenda that you would like pulled off, anybody would like pulled off? The chair is pulling off the executive committee report. Do need a motion to approve the remaining consent agenda items.
Motion to approve the remaining consent
items. We have a second on it. A motion and a second to approve the remaining consent agenda items. Is any objection to the motion? Without objection, show the motion passes. And I'm going to pass the gavel to Commissioner Shoup, Mayor Shoup, for the executive committee report.
Okay, we have... After item number 11, we will now entertain the executive committee report, item 6. I'll turn that back to Chairman Patterson.
Yeah, at our executive committee, it was brought up regarding the Tiger Grant application that I think just about all the cities have approved, and the county has approved it, the sending of it, but we haven't done anything. So the Tiger Grant is for the SunRail station in DeLand. The county was kind of, we had to get some more information from DOT regarding exactly what the scope of it, the Tiger Grant was. So we are okay and on board with it. It doesn't change anything. It's the same number of vehicles, same station amenities, same distance of double tracking and single tracking required to allow for our expansion of 15-minute headways and same communication system, including fiber background. So, Mr. Chair, I move approval of the TPO, River to Sea TPO, of sending a letter of support on the Tiger 7 application.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
We have a motion made and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Okay, Mr. Chair, and also I remove approval of the Executive Committee report.
Motion to second?
Second.
We have a motion made and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. And I'll hand it back to you.
Just trying to give you a little experience up here, Marshall.
Don't push it.
Okay, we're going to move on to action items. We do have an open a public hearing on the fiscal year 2016-17 and 2017-18 Unified Planning Work Program, the UPWP. Is there any public request comments on that? All right, hearing none. So item 5A, review and approval of resolution 2016-12 adopting the fiscal year 2016-17 and 2017-18 Unified Planning Work Program. Lois, you have any comments for the members?
I do. Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. We've been, of course, working on the work program for a couple of months now, and back in February we had presented a draft which was submitted to the Florida DOT as well as Federal Highway for review and comment, and I did go ahead and include their responses as handouts where all of you all are sitting. We did incorporate all of the changes that were necessary into the document. There really weren't any substantive changes. The tasks are all still the same. The deliverables are all still the same. The one change that I would like to bring to your attention is not included in their letters of comment, but it is information that we received and I've been talking about, which is there was an adjustment to the formula for planning funds for MPOs under the FAST Act, the last transportation authorization bill. But the change in funding hadn't been released. And as I would have suspected, right here at the end of the stretch, we got the actual figures. And in year one of our UPWP, just in time to put it into the document, we got an additional roughly $83,000, which we went ahead and allocated to the ITS task, ITS master planning task, which we knew we did not have funding for, but we had in the UPWP as a placeholder. And then we put a small amount of money towards our general planning task. So again, that's additional funding, good news for us, and allows us to move forward with more of the ITS planning work that we've been hoping to do and that was the subject of our retreat this year. So again, the UPWP has been out there. It is currently final and seems to meet with everybody's approval and waiting for the board to weigh in.
Are there any questions? If you have any questions and wish to be recognized, you remember to raise your card. I don't see any cards up. We will entertain a motion for approval.
Motion
for approval of the resolution 2016-12 adopting the fiscal year 2016-17 and 2017-18 Unified Planning Work Program. Is there any debate on the motion? If you favor the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
If you oppose the motion, say no. Motion passes unanimously. Move on to item B. I wanted to take a vote on it because it was a public hearing on that issue. Review and approval of resolution 2016-13 amending the fiscal year 2015-16, 2019, and 20 Transportation Improvement Program, the TIP. Lois?
This is pretty straightforward. As the agenda item background summary mentioned, there are three items that are being added, and they are listed: I-4 resurfacing, roundabout at State Road 44 and Grand Avenue that there's has been in the news quite a bit lately. And then the traffic signal preemption for New Smyrna Beach, which is a project that DOT has been working with the city on to try and utilize current year funding. And then there's a slight modification to a resurfacing project that has been in the TIP, excuse me, for US 1. And I just want to make note that each month I've been asked to go ahead and give an update on the drawdown of current year set-aside funding that we have usually in a reserve box for bicycle and pedestrian projects and traffic operations projects. The addition of the New Smyrna Beach project means that we will draw down, for the most part, all of the traffic operations funding that we set aside for the current year. We do still have just under $700,000 in the bicycle and pedestrian box. The DOT has identified a project that we can place that money on, and it doesn't draw from the list itself because there weren't any projects ready to be advanced at this point beyond what has been advanced. But the East Central Florida Regional Rail Trail project, the really large piece that's going to connect Edgewater over towards the Maytown area, the bids came in on that project, and they were over what has already been programmed. And so this provides an opportunity for us to go ahead and allocate at least that $700,000, and we'll bring that back next month in the form of a TIP amendment. The DOT is also looking for other funds that might be available in current year, unspent on other projects or unobligated yet, that they'll be able to apply to close that gap as well. And this just will help continue the momentum of trail building in this area that we can really look forward to over the next few years.
Any questions? Entertain a motion for approval.
Move approval.
We have a motion for approval of the resolution 2016-13 amending the fiscal year 2015-16, 2019-20 Transportation Improvement Program. Any debate on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, so the motion passes unanimously.
Second.
Moving on to presentations, we have several presentations this morning. Again, if you have any questions and wish to be recognized, please raise your card. That kind of keep the flow moving. The first thing we have is a presentation discussion on the draft findings for the SRCA A1A Pedestrian Safety and Mobility Study. And Lois, we have somebody.
Yes, thank you. We do. We have Adam Bergdorf, and he is an engineer that works with Kittleson Associates, one of our general planning firms. And he's been working on the A1A Pedestrian Safety and Mobility Study. And, of course, this covers both county road sections and state road sections of A1A throughout the entirety of our planning area. This particular study looked at initial information on the entire length of the corridor and then focused in on six high-priority areas. They really identified nine, but we had enough funding for six high-priority areas. And Adam's going to review a little bit about the study and some of the, at least an overview of the findings. There's a lot that goes into this. And so if you're concerned or you're interested in any of the areas, I would encourage you to make sure that we know so that we can share the more detailed findings with you.
He is aware of the fact that we don't use the hook here. If you talk too long, that podium is electrified and you will be burnt to a crisp.
He's heard me mention it more than five times.
Yes, sir. Lois has prepped me on that one. So again, thank you, Lois, for the introduction. So the overall goal of the project is to identify some implementable projects and project types that can, for these six specific focus areas that can hopefully be expanded to cover the entire corridor and be attributable to in a systemic manner for the entire 56-mile corridor that is A1A. So as Lois mentioned, we initially identified three different areas. We expanded that to six of the nine focus areas, and we've completed all the field reviews. And last week, we had a meeting with our stakeholder group to talk about some of the detailed findings of the study. So I just kind of want to go over this, the preliminary findings for the six areas, some of the common issues that were identified within the six areas. This is not an exhaustive list by any means. I just want to give you guys an idea. So the first area, we're going to start in the south and work our way north. This is in New Smyrna Beach. The crash information is there, and that helped us qualify this this particular focus area. But some of the key offenses that we saw along the corridor were lack of sidewalk connectivity, some poor maintenance regarding traffic striping. Also, there were some very wide turn lanes that were contributing to some increased speed through this area. Moving north in the focus area B, this is in the southern areas of Daytona Beach and northern limits of Daytona Beach shores. This is where we noticed there were areas where there was some good lighting, but then some relatively poor lighting in the area, and then also a lack of formal crossing opportunities through this five-lane section. Moving further north into the heart of Daytona Beach, this was a focus area that was divided into two pieces that straddles another piece that the Florida Department of Transportation studied about 2 years ago now. So we expanded the limits of that due to the high number of crashes and injuries along the way. Here we had very inconsistent bike facilities. Sometimes they're on the sidewalk, sometimes they're supposed to be on the travel way, but very narrow lanes. And then also some of this decorative intersection treatments led to some visibility issues with the actual crosswalk from the motorist perspective and also the pedestrian's perspective. So the team identified some strategies to help to clean that up a little bit and provide enhanced visibility there. Moving further north, you're starting to get into Ormond Beach. In this area, we have kind of a four-lane section, five-lane section balance. So there is an area where there is a median. Again, we have numerous opportunities for additional crosswalks that could be striped. And then again, the bike lane facilities you can see in the right picture are quite narrow. That's only about 1.5 to 2 feet wide. It's a shoulder, but it gives a perception that a bike could be accommodated there. A little further north, this is on the north end of Ormond Beach and into Ormond by the Sea. This was actually the area that had the highest, severity of, you know, it's the three total fatalities within this area and seven injuries that are bicycle and pedestrian related. This area had numerous occasions where lighting was kind of an issue. As you can see in the picture on the left, the light is kind of like a spotlight, it looks like, and it doesn't spread out to cover, you know, enhanced areas. So there's significant dark spots present along the corridor. Also, this area had very wide driveways and instances where there was not a driveway for the parcel, creating conflict points for bikes and pets and motorists alike.
Can you ask a question right there? Mm-hmm. On the lighting, is turtle lighting a part of that?
Yes, that is one of the common issues along the corridor. This particular light that has a shroud around it to help shield the turtles, but it's actually kind of creating an adverse effect on the roadway lighting itself. So there's some strategies that you can accommodate both turtle interests and the safety of pedestrians and bicyclists alike. And our team identified those. Moving up into focus area G, this was on the southern end of Flagler Beach, city of Flagler Beach, but we also looked at an area further north in Beverly Beach at the Camptown RV Resort. It was just a small section where there were a couple of fatalities recently in the area. In this area, you have dunes on one side and then some, you know, residential hotel and restaurant-type establishment land uses on the other side. So there's a lot of crossing opportunities along the way, but there are relatively few actual marked crosswalks or formal crosswalks that were identified. And then, again, we have some minor street crossing issues where there's maybe some maintenance problems or lack of markings. So the team worked together to identify a bunch of potential suggestions along these areas. So the next steps, we're going to wrap up the six individual reports and have our team reviewing those. Those are in a review cycle right now. When they're complete, they'll be incorporated into the final report in June. As I mentioned earlier, last week on the 20th, we met with our stakeholder group to describe and walk through how we could use the systemic countermeasure matrix, which is the menu of options that, you know, from that identified issues that were unique to the six areas, but perhaps they could be expanded and strategies could be employed along the entire corridor. So we'll be back in June to kind of wrap up the final presentations, and with that, I'll entertain any questions.
Have any questions? Chairman Davis?
Yeah, I noticed throughout your thing, I'm a big stickler about bicyclists, you know, and them following the rules of the road. Many times all over the county I'm driving around, and I have to stop at a stop light, but the bicyclist blows right by me, or he'll cut across in front of me, you know. And is education any part of this program to let these people know you've got to ride with traffic, you got to obey the traffic laws? A lot of accidents can be avoided if they just follow the rules.
Yep. There are three legs to that stool. You know, we've kind of covered some engineering-type improvements, but there is education and enforcement likewise. And that exact same topic came up during our stakeholder meeting last Wednesday, and we talked it through with the captain of the Flagler Beach Police Department, as well as one of our teammates who is a former major with the Florida Highway Patrol. Grady Carrick is his name, and talking about how we could help educate the police force as to how those offenses are, you know, could be corrected through some enforcement or maybe some warnings.
Okay, thank you very much.
Big John, Big House on the Hill. Lois, is this consultant, so he said, you know, this is sort of bad maybe, you know. Do you intend to ask him to give us comparisons to other places so we can decide if we're losing too many people, not enough people, things like that? And I guess we don't even think about money at this point, do we? Thank you.
We always think about money, because the reality is we can have lots of great plans, and if we can't afford to implement, then we don't get any benefit from it. That's actually one of the key drivers of this particular study. You know, we're talking about 60 miles worth of A1A, and that's why we narrowed in on the areas that seem to be the most troublesome. And it was not only based on actual crashes, but as Adam mentioned, we worked quite a bit with law enforcement to find out where their perception of problems and what their perception of problems and how they are issuing traffic citations, so that we could include that in the consideration. And again, these were the six areas that we focused on. It will be incumbent upon all of us to have a city surrounding the corridors where there is considered high crashes and problems and countermeasures, as well as the opportunity to package some of that together, for example, on the state road portion, where we can work with DOT to package like items together and make corrections ad hoc along the corridor, and we'll continue to work on that. Comparisons, again, in this particular study, and why A1A was chosen, is A1A has been notoriously challenged and one of the higher areas where we have the most bicycle and pedestrian conflicts. It is an area that is very important to tourism, and we have a lot of crossing problems. So it was selected for that reason. But we can provide some comparative information if anybody is interested in it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Bergdahl. Eddie. Oh, I'm sorry.
Ms. Denny's was first.
Oh, she has hers up.
You're supposed to pop me on the head, Ms. Denny.
Ms.
Denny's, and then we'll go to Mr. Wheeler.
Permission to pop the chair in the head.
Which one?
In this meeting, Mr. Chair. I'll reserve the other right. Just a question. In your preparation for the final report in June, how many of these, this is what I'd be interested in, how many of these were alcohol-related? Or not crossing at marked intersections, in what time of day that these occurred, because I drive down, you know, in New Smyrna Beach in Atlantic, we have some pretty good marked intersections there, but I promise you probably easy 60% of the time the pedestrians and or the bicyclists are not obeying the marked intersections or the bike paths or anything that's marked. So we can put all these improvements in that we do, and the law states a bicycle is the same as a vehicle. And we're doing what we can on bike trails as fast as we can and funding them. But there's just an element of human nature you cannot plan for, and there won't be enough dollars to ever fix that. So I think it's important to look at this, not just this happened here, here, and here. Okay, again, what was the cause of the accident? I think that's critical. We've got to have all that information. Was it alcohol related? Was it impairment of some kind?
Improper crossing.
So mm-hmm. I think that's important to look at.
Mm-hmm. And yep. We do all of that information.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
the individual reports as well as the overall report will include a lot of that information.
Yes.
And you're right, when we've looked at A1A in the past, during hours of darkness and often alcohol on the part of the driver or the person trying to cross plays a big role. And that does present some challenges, certainly, right? We can't engineer our way out of people drinking and making poor choices, but better lighting and more clear crosswalks can sometimes help encourage better behavior, but law enforcement then becomes the piece. And that's one of the reasons we wanted to include law enforcement in the study, because we need to, in order to support them in enforcing, we need to know what kind of issues they encounter. Again, just working together to make sure that we're filling in all the pieces.
And I guess I'm going to take a look at that before we commit dollars to what has been identified as, you know, an area of interest. We can only control what we control, and the dollars that we invest should be those areas that we can control and make a difference, and we can't control human behavior. So that's what I will be looking at in June.
Right. Commissioner Wheeler, you have a question?
Commissioner Wheeler in Daytona Beach Shores, thank you for working with us on our issues in the Shores. Exactly, I was going to bring up what Deb had mentioned. We are educating our people on the crosswalks, and we are giving out citations for people who are going through the traffic that is going through the pedestrian walk areas. We are trying to tighten up on that. However, I will add, just recently, we had a woman who had been jaywalking for quite some time, and she had been given several citations for jaywalking. As you all know, the majority of our residents live in the condos on the east side, and they have to cross over to go to the grocery, the bank. Everything that they do is on the west side. And by golly, she hit the crosswalk in front of Publix and was hit. We finally got her to do the crosswalk, and she was hit and seriously injured. So those things are going to happen, but there are critical areas in the Shores that it's going to be a small help, but it is definitely going to help. And I like the idea of doing the pedestrian, the light for the blind, because we do have a lot of visually impaired. And I guess that's going to be happening right there at Dunlawton and A1A, that intersection. I've been asking for that for quite some time, because I do have quite a few people in my condo that are visually impaired, and they've been asking for that. So I think it's all positive. It's not going to be the end of the road or the solution, but at least we're working on it, and I thank you for all your work.
Okay. Mayor Perrone?
Yes. Just a question regarding the bicycle safety. Have we ever considered signage, especially at critical intersections, just advising bicyclists that they have to obey the law as if they were a motorized vehicle? How many times have any of us seen bicyclists going the wrong way on a road, entering an intersection even though there's a red light there? You see plenty of signs regarding pedestrians, you know, with regard to crosswalking, telling people that it's a crosswalk, even alerting them before a car even gets there with a little picture of a stop sign, and if they have to stop, if there's a pedestrian or a yield sign. But nothing in any of the roadways telling bicyclists that they have to obey the law as if they were a motorized vehicle.
Mm-hmm. That I'm not aware of any present on A1A, but I know on US-1 there are, and I think it's from Holly Hill, there is some signage directed for bicyclists to keep them on the right side. So there are options available, such as that.
And let me just add that that's a good point. Bicycles, just like motorized vehicles, have to obey the same rules of the road. Although this study is heavy on the engineering and enforcement aspects of our safety program, TPO has an ongoing safety program that includes education. And whereas we do have recommendations that refer to education in this study, it's something that we do on an ongoing basis. Earlier this month, we were in South Daytona at a helmet fitting. Next month, we'll be in Oak Hill. And at those venues, they are very heavily education-oriented with literature that we pass out, as well as fitting the helmets and safety advice.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Thank you, Adam. Item Roman number 6B, presentation discussing the draft fiscal year 2016-17 River to Sea TPO budget. The budget committee, subcommittee met and recommends the budget. We met in March. The draft budget is presented for your review, and it will be placed on the agenda in May for final approval. Does anybody have any questions on it? And Herb is here to answer any questions. Herb Seeley. Is there any questions on the, Mr. Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Yeah, I got a couple here. I'm looking at going over this budget here, and
is Herb here?
I'll go ahead and tackle the questions, and if I'm
okay.
stumped, we'll bring Herb up.
I'm just have about five questions here. What are included in fringe benefits? Does that include the insurance, health care, and all that good
exactly.
stuff?
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm good on that. I noticed we got fees and dues, and what are we paying fees for and dues for?
We pay, I'll call Herb up to give the actual detail on the
I mean, we don't have to get too far into it. I just, you know, are we a member of whatever
clubs? We are AFTA and a number of organizations.
We pay the Central Florida.
You'll have to be on the microphone, sir.
Yeah, Herb Seeley, the TPO. We pay the Central Florida MPO Alliance an administrative fee to they actually oversee and do minutes for the alliance. It's pension administration fee, the accounting fee, banking fees, legal fees, audit fees. Audit is not under professional services; it's under actually it's a fee.
Okay.
That's pretty
okay,
much
and okay, and we pay dues for.
APTA, Florida for Better Transportation, Public Transportation Association, Bicycle Association, FPZA.
Wow. Okay. Now, and I just went through this with the VFW when I was the vice commander over there. We were paying this really expensive for a copy machine. And I notice here we're paying for a copy expense of $21,000 and the same exact cost for a copy machine cost of $21,000. It almost looks like we're double paying for the same thing. And then we go up about five lines, and then we have a printing cost that we're using our own printer. We got to pay for it, or are these outside printing issues?
This is outside printing. The copy machine, what we do is there's a copy machine in-house. We pay that out of the general fund, and then we charge the individual grants for actually the use of that copy machine. So on the revenue side, you'll actually see revenue coming in that's offsetting that copy machine charge.
I mean, that's awful expensive for, and we're that's just a rent for a copy machine, $21,000.
That's the lease plus the use the copies that we actually run.
I mean, it would almost seem like you could buy it for a lot cheaper than that.
We actually have two machines.
Okay, and. I always complain about this through every board that I see. Network and web page costs $32,540. That's a lot of money, but I think we always should shop a little better for that. But we keep getting hit with these big numbers. We're government.
The bid for the IT services will be up next year. We bid out our IT services, which is done out of house, which some things cannot be solved in-house. So it's sourced out.
Okay. Just really not happy about those copy machine costs. All right, thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes. I have a question.
Oh, Mayor Perlin, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Lois, you're losing $650,000 of federal funds with corresponding reductions in special studies. I mean, how is this going to affect the ability to do the projects?
Yeah, actually, that is primarily due to the completion of the long-range plan. Really, last year and the year before, our budgets were quite a bit higher because we were doing a long-range plan, and that's been retired or completed, and that's the big part of it. There are some special studies that were funded with our TMA set aside, the SU dollars, that we did this year that we're not necessarily doing in the future. So, again, that really corresponds with work specific work activity. Thank it's you. Not a loss in revenue oh, so fine. Much.
Thank you.
Any other? Okay, moving on from numeral 6C, presentation discussion of the FDOT MPO Unified Work Planning Work Program Agreement. Lois?
Thank you. So we approved the Unified Planning Work Program a little earlier in this agenda, and going along with that is the agreement, the contract that the TPO has with the DOT to do that work and to receive planning funds. And for some of you that were here, you may remember when we changed our planning area boundary, we had to renew a bunch of agreements. And one of those was our planning funds agreement, the PL agreement. And DOT, with some urging from Federal Highway, is updating that agreement and that arrangement with us. And they're really changing the way we contract for those to receive those funds. And so the big change that you'll see in the agreement that is included in your agenda packet has to do with the fact that the UPWP is not a standalone document anymore. It is going to actually be a scope of work that is attached to this planning agreement. And you see that in item number 3 on the first page of the draft contract. And so what that means is when we amend the UPWP, we're having to amend our contract and issue a supplemental to that contract. And that's a little different than what we've done in the past. And again, instead of that PL agreement remaining in effect over multiple years, they're putting a 2-year term on it. So it is now connected directly to our UPWP. On the second page of that, you'll see that they go into kind of defining what is an amendment and what is a modification. And we can modify the document itself, the UPWP, in a number of ways without having to do a contract change. But there are the overall total budget will require a contract change. That just means there's going to be an extra layer because any contract change will have to go through the DOT's legal department. I think from the perspective of the TPO board and our members, you're not going to experience much difference. On the back end, in the administrative side, we may have some additional work. Gene Ferguson, our TPO liaison, will have some additional work. His responsibility to oversee our expenditures ramps up significantly with this particular agreement. And again, because we have to execute this, I wanted to put it out here for your review. Obviously, in next month, we'll come back and actually approve or authorize the execution of this agreement. This is required for us to receive planning funds. So, you know, 90% of our funding comes from planning funds, or 80% from these federal highway planning funds. So we have very few options. This agreement has been reviewed, and earlier drafts were reviewed a number of times through the MPO Advisory Council, which is the statewide organization of MPOs. It was reviewed and commented on significantly by the MPOAC attorney Likewise, our TPO attorney has reviewed it, and they're both at a point where they believe that we can move forward with this. There's no what they consider fatal flaws. You know, whether this eats into our budget because it increases our administrative costs remains to be seen. That is the likely downside to this. But again, in terms of process and work, we won't see much change. I'm happy to answer any questions that anybody might have, if you have any.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Item D, presentation discussion of the draft congestion management process, CMP report.
Well, we have Mr. Rob Keith. Robert Bob Keith. And he's working on the congestion management process report. We have two requirements for processing data. One is the requirement of a CMP, and the other are performance measures that are now starting to be required on a federal level. And Bob's going to walk through that. He took us through some information last month, and we're going to, because this is something we haven't been doing, keep rolling this information out as we move along because it's a lot of data.
Yeah, I'll move through this very quickly because my intent today is just to give you an overview of where we stand with this. But I would like to give you some quick history. Of course, congestion management has been a requirement for MPOs since the early 1990s with the enactment of the ICE-T, Federal Transportation Planning Legislation. But the focus for MPOs broadened in 2012 with the enactment of MAP 21. In addition to congestion, we were from that point on required to look at other transportation performance considerations, including accessibility and certainly safety. With the development of our 2040 long-range plan, we did also develop and approve a congestion management document. You recall that was presented and approved by the board in August last year, I believe. That document outlined the broad scope for a comprehensive congestion management performance measurement system. Since that time, TPS staff has been working to develop or identify the specific data sources that would be required to perform the objectives of that report or that document. And we've developed specific operational measurements and the calculations that are required to derive those measurements. We presented those to the technical working group for their review, and based on the changes that they had recommended, we're moving forward now with the development of the final congestion management performance measurement report. We think we'll have it available for distribution and review in just a couple of weeks. I'd like to point out that our data manager, Artie Sharma, has been primarily responsible for doing this work. Congestion management, just to recap, is really just the application of strategies to improve the transportation system performance and reliability by reducing the adverse impacts of congestion on the movement of both people and goods. So that is our aim, and our focus is really rather comprehensive. We are looking at multiple modes, of course, motor vehicle, bicycle, pedestrian, transit, and freight. And we're also looking at multiple systems, the national highway system, the state highway system, strategic intermodal system, and, of course, off-system arterial and collector roads. And for each of these modes and systems, we're looking at dimensions of travel or goods movement, including the quality of the experience, the quantity of the goods or people that are being moved or moving, the accessibility of travel opportunities to the various components constituents out there. And we're also looking at how efficiently the systems are being used. I'm not going to go through the details of these numbers with you, of course. We'll get to that in the coming weeks when we present the final report. But we are looking at daily vehicle miles traveled for motor vehicles. as an overall indication of how much travel we're having to deal with, that sets the context for how we look at the other measures. Are we having increased congestion as a result of increasing traffic volume out there, or has traffic volume remained relatively steady despite increases in congestion? It can help us focus our attention on what the problems really are. We've looked at congestion as a percentage of centerline roadway miles, and just as a quick aside, we've found that there really isn't much congestion in our planning area as we measure it. Of course, we're very much concerned about auto safety, and we look at crash statistics, including fatalities, severe injuries, and property damage. We do the same for bicycle activity and pedestrian activity. We're focusing our attention on intersections as they relate to crashes, because we know where that's where a lot of crashes do occur, and often the issues can be easily identified and corrected. We're doing that not just for automobile travel, but also for bicycle crashes and pedestrian crashes. And finally, we are looking at transit, both VOTRAN and Flagler Transportation in Flagler County and SunRail. And our concerns there are ridership, on-time performance, headways. So this just gives you an overview. Again, we will be presenting a final report or a report to you in the coming weeks. This will be a recurring report every year. It will serve as a basis for gauging our progress with respect to improving these conditions. We hope that it will lead to better informed decision-making and better use of public funds to address our transportation issues. And with that, I'll just ask if there are any questions.
Mr. Keith?
Yes, sir.
I think we have a question here coming from Mr. McGurk.
Bob, thank you. One question about State Road 44. You said that there doesn't seem to be a lot of congestion in our planning area. How does State Road 44 and the unique congestion patterns, such as was on 44, play into this modeling?
Well, of course, you and I both know there is congestion there. The general congestion measures we use are average annual daily traffic, and that doesn't address specific times. We know that, and this congestion management performance measurements report is not going to identify those specific problems in many cases. We hope it will lead us to further study where we know there is an approaching issue, but there are other tools in our bag too for identifying congestion and focusing on those kinds of problems.
What this is more of a broad sort of aggregate, and much like the questions that Commissioner Denny's has, Councilmember Denny's had about the crashes on A1A and bicycle and pedestrian activity. What this is going to do, this is again a requirement that we have, and it gives us broad ideas. It gives us an indication of areas that we need to start to drill down into. And something like State Road 44 on either end where we have congestion issues, we need to drill down into the details of those beyond what happens in this report. This gives us, again, sort of the general, are we heading in the right direction? As we move forward and we take our long-range plan and we actually build some of the projects that we say are going to improve our area, we install some of the ITS that we say is going to improve our area, is that reflected in the aggregate statistics? It's not intended to be necessarily. It'll identify those areas where we have congestion, but there has to be separate work to look into the detail of why that's occurring.
Thank you.
It's interesting that State Road 44, as it goes from the Lake County line all the way to New Smyrna Beach, you're lucky in New Smyrna Beach that it's four lane, where we're two lane from about where my neighborhood is all the way through the land, and it is an absolute nightmare over there on State Road 44. I think we've been lucky we haven't had a lot of crashes, but we're working on some issues to resolve it. But it is 44 is traffic congestion, I think, is a good thing to have if you, from a standpoint of economic development, because it tells you something's going on in a community. But it is a nightmare in itself from that way. I wouldn't want to wish it on anybody. If you came over to where I live and sit there for 10 minutes trying to get out, and I mean we're trying to turn right, not turn left, just trying to turn right to go out on to 44 or to Kepler Road is just crazy. So thank you, Mr. Keith.
Thank you.
Mr. Ferguson, you are up. The FDOT report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're trying out a new format for the construction report in your handout. It's more of a summary of the key projects with a lot of the detail left out, but the important information is there. I'll start off with the I-4 widening project. This project is moving along smoothly. It looks like it will be complete later this calendar year in the fall. We've also got the I-95 project. We started work on that about a year and a half ago or so, and we anticipate completion of that, including the system-to-system interchange, spring of 2018. Total project cost of about $205 million. Then we have 415 Seminole County Line to Riolas. As you can see, we estimate completion of that project next month. Then there's the I-4 resurfacing, St. John's, River Bridge to Saxon. The work began on that a couple of months ago. We expect it to be complete next spring. And the Bevel Road resurfacing project, similarly, work began at the end of last calendar year and should be completed later this summer. And then, of course, we have the 92 and US-1 resurfacing, basically Seagrave to Beach Street on 92. Right now, we expect that to be complete later this month. Thank you.
Any questions?
I don't have a question, but I have a comment. On your push-button status on page 85, the Flagler Beach bulb out and relocation of the flashing light, for any of you that come off 100 and turn right and head south, the light that used to be in the middle of the sidewalk that was not very obvious is now out into that bulb out, and it has done a significant job of slowing vehicles down and also giving people a little more indication of when we talk about crosswalks and so on. It's probably improved by at least 50 to 60%, so appreciate that. The project was let back in November, and it took them about 2 days to do it in the middle of February. So it was, it's been a couple of years coming, but it's made a significant difference for anybody that travels through town. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Mr. Burton. You know, I'm always talking about the intersection up there at I-4. What is your lighting timetable as to when they begin to put those lights up there in the intersection of I-4?
If I remember correctly, and I'm going by memory on this one, that construction project should be beginning in the next fiscal year, which will be July through June. I'm not sure the exact date of that. Once the contract is let and we have firm dates established with the contract, it will begin to show up on these reports.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Next, Lois, the executive director, has several items she wants to briefly cover today.
I heard that. Okay. The repurposing of earmark funding, some of you all may be aware of this, but there, over time, back in the days of earmarks, were several projects that were identified but never moved forward. There were also some projects that moved forward but didn't expend all of the funding that had been set aside. And so there is a direction to go ahead and free up that funding from those projects and go ahead and use that money.
And that money was shared at the state level in Florida. It's roughly $31 million. But there are certainly some limitations to that funding, and we're not sure what all of those limitations are. Right now, the DOT staff up in Tallahassee are taking a look at the restrictions and trying to come out with some guidance to the districts on utilizing that money. One of the restrictions, as an example, is it has to be used within 50 miles of the original earmark. So, again, the idea is the money stays where it was originally targeted. And so there are some projects in this area, like the Saxon Boulevard extension that was on there at one point. Generally, we have in this area no funding that was left over in the Flagler County area, but somewhere around $3 to $4 million in the Volusia County area on various projects. So again, we're still waiting for some word from the department at the district level on when that money's going to become available and what options there might be for allocating it. The good news on that is it is federal money, so it's not restricted to being used on the state road system. Moving on to the update of the 1792 CIP, a number of you all have been involved in that project, and just to let you know that the consultant is working on a draft report, and that should be out sometime in the next few weeks, no more than a month, and then there'll be a final stakeholder meeting to let folks have a chance to really review that report and provide any input, and then we'll be bringing it through a review and approval by this board. Sometime before June. Status update on the call for projects. Of course, we go through this each year, and sometimes we have projects that are just not as traditional as previous years. I can tell you from our set-aside bicycle and pedestrian program, we've had a total of 19 project applications this year, and on the traffic operations, we've had 33. So it's a very busy year for funding requests. That might be expected because in the long-range plan, we tried to direct more money towards these set-aside smaller projects. So again, there's a great deal of interest. Most of the projects that we've received in each of these categories are pretty traditional: sidewalks, trails, guardrails, turn lanes. But there are a few that are unusual, of course, in keeping with our theme of utilizing technology and ITS more. We have a couple of ITS projects that are a little unusual. We have a request for a trolley service that's a little unusual. And again, what I would like to do is, in some cases where we might want some policy direction, is take that through a full discussion at the executive committee and get some direction. And if there is any sort of definition, policy direction, we'll bring a recommendation back to the board next month on that. Otherwise, the call for projects is moving along well. Current year SU funding, I already went ahead and discussed when we were talking about the TIP amendment. Tell the TPO survey is going really well. We've had just over 800 responses to the survey, and we're not quite halfway through the time frame. So again, we're really on a great track, and I want to thank everybody who has posted it on their website, who has forwarded emails, shared with mailing lists. Again, we are really happy with the response. More than half of those responses have come from committee activity and sharing those links, so that's good news, and again, I appreciate that support. So far, the TPO board is in the lead.
Go TPO board.
Go board. I also want to bring your attention to a program, the Transportation Regional Incentive Program, or TRIP program. And TRIP, I'm sure a number of you know, is a 50-50 matching program, and it's designed to help fund and move along projects of regional importance. And in order to be eligible, there's a series of requirements that have to be met. But one of those is that you are a part of an interlocal agreement between different entities in your region, and in this case, that is typically achieved by this MPO partnering with other MPOs to have an interlocal agreement identifying those projects. Now, we don't necessarily prioritize those projects in that effort. Some MPOs do. We have never done that before. But the current agreement between the MPOs is a decade old, and so we're looking at updating that. And the suggestion through the MPO Alliance at the staff director's level has been, why don't we just put this as a part of our call for projects each year so that we are always updating and maintaining current lists. So we've been asked to go ahead and update our list and submit it. Again, the Alliance doesn't do anything more than approve the list that's submitted as long as all the projects are eligible. So we'll be looking, and we're working with the technical committee, and we'll be updating that list and bringing it forward, trying to prepare that for presentation to the CFMPO Alliance in July, which is their next meeting. And that is all I have for today.
Any questions? Okay, we'll go to member comments. Does anybody have anything here good transportation related? Ms. Denny's?
Just want to share with you that last weekend, Lita Handy Peters and I spent the weekend in Orlando at the MPO Advisory Institute. I would suggest, if you've never been there, to go. Some of it is a little long, but it's all technical, and it's definitely worth attending. So it was enjoyable. I enjoyed spending some time and getting to know Ms. Handy Peters a little bit better too. But it was a really, really good forum and program. I would suggest anybody and everybody go that can. It's well worth your time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
In the interest of transportation, the City of Lake Helen will be having our annual car show. We should have over 300 late model cars in Lake Park, and you're all invited to come out. It's free.
Okay. And Commissioner Andy Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, want to thank the TPO for allowing me to go. I think it was quite an experience for me, and I did learn a whole lot. And like Ms. Denny said, I recommend it for anybody who has been on here, and we even had new folks in there, and it was really a good learning experience. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, I went through it a couple of years ago, and I felt it was necessary, even though that I had done something similar to that back in the 90s when I was on this board. And even though I was in the legislature, I served on the transportation committee and even on the funding to keep up with it. So it's something, if you're really interested in transportation planning, to go at it. It's a lot of information. It's packed in over the weekend. And you get to play a little games. Hopefully they did double Jeopardy with you.
Our team won. Just
great.
So you know, we doubled down. We beat the MPO. We beat the Lynx representative and everybody else that thought they knew. We cleaned the room. It was beautiful. Beautiful.
We won. It doesn't get you anything. No.
Yeah, it did. We won. Yeah.
Dragon race.
Yeah. All right.
It got me that.
Any other members have anything? Okay. As you know, we don't have a meeting in July, so May and June are going to probably be busy. So you get your agenda and you have any questions that kind of help us out in the meetings, you might want to contact a staff member that has that to answer any burning questions that you may have. And there's nothing else to come before the board. Our next meeting is May 25th. We are adjourned. Thank you.